Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Oliver Askew, and you're listening to Indie Podden.
To that one know where my easy rider goes.
Get the
bar.
Oh, clear.
Does anyone know where my easy rider goes?
Välkommen till Indiepodden avsnitt 20 och välkommen Gregej och Jakob till denna min höjdpunkt i veckan får jag säga.
Tack så mycket.
Själv,
tack
så mycket.
Nu är det ju, vi har ju celebert besök den här veckan med i form av Oliver Askew, Arrow McLarens rookie för i år och halvsvensk och bara allmänt supertrevlig och supersnabb.
Mm. Ja, det har vi. Det är jätteroligt att vi har fått med honom på ett rejält snack.
Intressant personlighet efter att ha snackat med honom en tag. Han har ju många intressen vid sidan om racingen också och han har ödmjukheten i behåll. Det tror jag kan vara viktigt i framtiden för honom.
Han verkade ha en, och det tror jag lyssnarna också kommer märka när ni lyssnar på samtalet med Oliver, att han verkar ha rejält med självdistans. Ovanligt mycket självdistans kanske för att vara en idrottsman som befinner sig på toppen av sin karriär ska vi kanske inte säga, men som ändå har kommit så långt på någonting som lovar att bli en framgångsrik racingkarriär. Så väldigt, väldigt stor portion ödmjukhet och självdistans som var väldigt trevligt att höra, eller hur Jakob?
Absolut, precis det jag tänkte säga, att det är sällan man möter idrottare på sån elitnivå att liksom förstå vilken privilegierad position han har råkat hamna i. Och han har en del historier kring just det, att man inte har råd att krascha, vilket kanske inte x antal andra som man kommer dela banan med har riktigt förstått.
Och en liten historia där som jag skulle vilja dela med mig av. Det är från förra året, premiären i St. Petersburg i Indycar förra året. Då Indy Lights körde ju samtidigt då. Och det är ju min pappa som har berättat den här. Nämligen han var på plats med sin kompis Börje. Och så man står där i depågatan och pratar lite och så kommer det fram en kille i racingoverall och så frågar sig, ursäkta mig, är ni från Sverige? Och så pappa står där i en 3 kronor t-shirt. Ja, men då var det ju Oliver Askew då. Så du berättade här, då presenterade han ju sig då. Och pappa hade ju aldrig hört talas om honom förut då. Men så då körde Indy Lights då liksom för Andretti. Och hans mamma var svensk då. Det var det han tyckte var så roligt att prata med pappa en stund. Så han stod en stund och jag har ju förstått det så här efteråt, i och med att den här historien återkommer mer och mer och när han pratar om Oliver, att Oliver är ju sonen min pappa aldrig fick.
Det måste ha varit en smärtsam insikt, Ronny.
Ja, men det var ju därför, det kanske var den främsta anledningen. Jag hann ju tyvärr inte vara med förra veckan, men om man ska vara helt ärlig så var det faktiskt så att jag kunde inte förmå mig att vara med på intervjun faktiskt, för jag kände mig så i underläge.
Det där är nog nästan du behöver reda ut med din pappa, Ronny.
Ja,
det kanske inte är helt rätt forum. Jag menar, jag och Jakob, vi kan lite psykologi och vi är så här förstående människor. Men jag tror inte vi kan hantera fullt ut den ångest, mörkret som finns bakom det här. Men det finns kanaler för det också.
Ja. Ja, nej, jag får bearbeta det på något. Jag börjar med att prata med pappa här, så får vi se vad som...
Men för att prata lite allvar, Oliver kommer ihåg den här incidenten. Det var en av de grejerna vi pratade med honom om under intervjun. Det säger också en hel del att han minns den här incidenten när han träffar på din pappa och hans kompis. Och det säger också en del om hans ödmjukhet.
Mm. Ja, han tar fansen på allvar liksom.
Ja, och på tal om, ja, det var ju en jättepositiv nyhet att Oliver ska vara med i den här veckans avsnitt. En annan positiv nyhet är ju att också att nu är det ju spikat att det blir IndyCar-premiär på Texas den 6 juni.
Äntligen, riktig racing.
Mm. Och då får vi börja snacka upp säsongen på nytt här nu de närmsta veckorna här nu, för nu är det ju 4 veckor kvar ungefär. Så att det kommer vi har kommit gott om tid och sondera terrängen igen här.
Jag vet inte om jag skulle palla med en till sån här total antiklimax som det blev senast vi skulle snacka upp en säsong för någon månad sedan. Eller några månader
sedan. Två månader sedan.
Alltså det var ju sånt massivt antiklimax. Jag var så lite svårt att fortsätta efter det. Men nu är det nya tag. Det kommer bli så otroligt kul att äntligen få se riktig racing.
Mm. Och premiären i Texas kommer ju ha ett litet annat upplägg. Vi kommer ju ha alltihop på en och samma dag.
Mm.
Alltså träning, kval och race på söndagen den 6 juni.
Lite och, Formel E-upplägg alltså.
Mm. Ja, precis. Eller är det lördag? Nu sa jag söndag. Är det lördag?
Det brukar vara en lördag i Texas eftersom det är kvällsrace. Ska man komma ihåg. Jag kommer ihåg att jag har gått upp klockan 2 på natten för att kolla på ett IndyCar-race från Texas tidigare.
Ja, det är lördag. Sveriges nationaldag, lördag.
Precis.
Och vad tror vi om det? För jag lyssnade på en Indianapolis-podcast med Connor Daly i veckan här. Och det var innan det blev klart att det blir den 6 juni. Och Connor var ju lite tveksam just sett ur eget perspektiv, så hade han ju tyckt att det var grymt, för han känner ju sig väldigt förberedd och i och med att han har kört så pass mycket på Texas då. Men han tyckte ju att liksom allihopa, liksom rookies och alla in på samma dag, liksom träning, kval och race på en gång, att det är en ganska stor risk med det, med tanke på att det krävs lite tid att bygga upp farter och bygga upp självförtroendet, särskilt för rookies då. Nu har de ju haft rookie-testerna just på Texas Motor Speedway, men vad är er tagning på detta?
Ja, med tanke på det ganska bra nivå på årets rookies, och det är inte särskilt många heller. Det är Ryan Sweekay, Oliver Askew och Alex Palou som är, jag tror jag bekräftade för hela säsongen i alla fall, och sen kanske Felipe Nasa dyker upp, men alltså startlistan är ju inte klar än, och det är ingen av de här rookieförarna som jag liksom oroar mig för. De är ju där på merit allihopa, så att ja, det kan nog gå hela vägen hem. Jag är inte oroad över det liksom. Jag är oroad över om det skulle regna den dagen. Det vore ju katastrof.
Mm.
Då måste man ju skjuta ut det ännu mer, och då vet jag inte hur man hanterar det. Men nu är liksom hela dagen uppsatt från 1:30 på dagen, träning i 2 timmar, sen ska det vara kvalet klockan 5 och sen loppet börjar 8:45 Eastern Time. Och det blir 4:15 på natten, svensk tid om jag räknar rätt. Så det är väldigt ihoptryckt, väldigt sent på dagen för alla. Så att det kommer vara en ovan situation för precis alla, och särskilt i och med att man har så strikta guidelines om vilka som faktiskt får komma in på området.
Hur ser de ut? Berätta.
Man måste intyga att man är frisk, man måste testas, man måste använda ansiktsmask. Social distansering kommer gälla även i depån, för jag antar teamen emellan då. Jag kan inte tänka mig att man har kompromisserat säkerhetspersonalen, läkarna som ska vara på plats om det händer en olycka och så fall. Så det jag antar då är att färre PR-människor, färre journalister, färre reportrar. Vi kanske får höra med Alex Elg om han är välkommen till exempel.
Mm.
Sådana icke-essentials, om man så säger, de kommer nog få stanna hemma. Så det kommer vara färre människor i depån, och det kommer vara en ovan stämning. Men det ska ju bli race.
Ja, Och så lämnar vi det för den här veckan. Men vi har anledning att återkomma till det ju allt eftersom här nu. För nu tror jag säkert nyhetsflödet kommer ju komma igång mer och mer här nu framöver också. Vilket kommer göra vårt jobb lite lättare.
Absolut. Sen måste vi också se till så att vi puffar för de genomgångarna av förare och team som vi gjorde inför den ursprungliga säsongstarten. I tidiga avsnitt av Indiepodden så ägnade vi ju säkert 3 hela avsnitt åt att väldigt systematiskt gå igenom hela årets Indycar-fält. Prata om styrkor, svagheter, intressanta nytillskott på gridden, förväntningar, massa snack som fortfarande är högaktuellt som jag tror att många av våra lyssnare fortfarande inte har lyssnat på.
Vi skulle kunna göra så att vi klipper ihop alla dem till ett enda sammanhängande avsnitt. Då kommer det bli lite längre då, men alltså om man vill lyssna på alltihop så kan du ju bara klicka igång det avsnittet. Så då vi kommer släppa en liten bonus här framöver.
Mycket bra, en best of-platta helt enkelt.
Best of gridden 2020.
Ja. Absolut Indiepodden 20.
Well...
ja, det blir bra. Eller vad heter de här blandbanden? Mr. Music. Mr. Indiepodden.
Och absolut Music 16 och 17. Och, ja. Bra. Innan vi drar igång intervjun med Oliver så vill vi ju återigen pusha för att vår tävling i samarbete med Tico Racing Shop är ju i full gång. Tico Racing Shop som drivs av Tico Persson som är en, som Gergej sa senast, en institution inom svensk motorsport som åker runt på alla tävlingar, inhemska tävlingar och säljer sina bilmodeller och har en av Sveriges, kanske Nordens, kanske Europas fetaste samlingar av memorabilia från Formel 1 framförallt och sportvagnar. Och tävlingen som vi hade nu, som vi annonserade förra veckan, det var ju att man har möjlighet att vinna en modell av Felix Indycar-bil från förra året och en autograf. Bilen är i skala 1-18 och den är värde 1200 kronor. Mm. Och det man behöver göra då för att vara med och tävla om det här, det är att man går in på tickoracing.se och så letar man upp Felix bilmodeller där och så kan man se hur många artiklar eller hur många bilmodeller har Tico till försäljning då, inklusive de som är slutsålda för tillfället och de som inte är det. Men hur många modeller eller hur många artikelnummer av Felix bilar finns till salu på ticoracing.se? Vi har fått in några stycken, en hel del bilar faktiskt. Så att,
vad gör man med den siffran att fortsätta.
Då, Ronny? Då gör man så att man mailar den siffran tillsammans med sina kontaktuppgifter till podcast@indiepodden.se. podcast@indiepodden.se. Och så är man med där i klustret av potentiella vinnare. Så utser vi vinnaren i nästa veckas Indiepod.
Yes.
Och pratade med Tico i veckan här också. Han, i och med att vi är en Indiepodcast så är det ju alltså vi... Och vi samarbetar också med Stefan Johansson titt som tätt. Och han sa det att han har ju faktiskt väldigt många modeller av just... bilmodeller från Stefan Johanssons karriär också. Mm. Mycket sportvagnar och även hans Formel 1-bilar. Hans Ligier JS31.
Ja.
The shitbox.
Ja. En av de sämsta bilarna som någonsin har konstruerats.
Ja. Men bilen är snygg som modell faktiskt, för den finns också i shoppen där, har jag sett.
Den är jättefin och den var ju väldigt fin i verkligheten också. Den var ju helt fantastisk, men helt värdelös.
Mm. Och synd att de byggde den Play-Doh-lera. Liksom. Jag har ingen hållfasthet.
Nej.
Fattar inte Ligiers strategi där.
Men... Nej, men alltså den hade väl en sån här tvådelad bensintank, va? Där det satt en del av bensintanken på varsin sida växellådan, om jag minns rätt. Hmm. Som säkert var så här helt genialt vid något ritbord, men helt värdelöst i praktiken.
Ja, Stefans kommentar att döma så tror jag att hela bilen var tvådelad, för framhjulen och bakhjulen verkar inte sitta ihop särskilt väl.
Nej, jag tror att den strukturella rigiditeten i längsled fanns liksom inte där när du har två bränsletankar som kämpar för att hålla ihop bilen. Liksom.
Nej.
Ja, det låter vanskligt faktiskt.
Yes.
Men ja, så stort tack till Tico Racing Cup för vårt samarbete. Och också vi passar på att tacka Automotorsport också, som vi, vårt samarbete fortsätter ju såklart. Och i kommande vecka, här nu nästa vecka, så släpps ju också i ett nummer där vår en simracing special där vi tre har varit med och bidragit med innehåll.
Just det.
Mm, precis.
Så jag tycker vi ska pusha för också att om ni vill få till lite, lite input där kring om ni själva vill komma igång eller bara läsa om det och njuta en stund i hängmattan här nu. Så,
och faktum är att det är Automotorsport, tidskriften gör en riktig storsatsning på det här med simracing nu under vår försommar. Att det här första numret som kommer nu nästa vecka, som innehåller artiklar om simracing, är det första av tre nummer faktiskt. Tre nummer i rad kommer innehålla olika typer av reportage om simracing med massa olika vinklar och intressanta fakta om egentligen virtuell motorsport överhuvudtaget. Så jättemycket läsning, naturligtvis inspirerad av den här, det här konstiga halvåret vi har haft, eller konstiga våren, där så mycket motorsport har flyttat online. Så vi hakar på den trenden, för det finns väldigt mycket intressant att läsa, intressanta människor att prata med och ja, många kul vinklar på det här med simracing, speciellt för folk som kanske själva vill sätta igång.
Härligt tycker jag när ett sånt magasin av automotorsports dignitet, tycker jag, som har den flexibiliteten att faktiskt ta till sig den här typen av motorsport också och spinna vidare på det och skapa intressanta artiklar att läsa. Så att jag tycker all cred till dem för detta också.
Ja, verkligen. Och jag menar, jag har faktiskt tänkt på det att det är så lätt att deppa ihop inför hela den här coronaskiten, men icke desto mindre, det kan finnas vissa enstaka positiva effekter av den här pandemin. Och jag tror att den här explosionen kring virtuell motorsport skulle faktiskt, i alla fall för oss motorsportintresserade, kunna vara en sån där positiv bieffekt av den här hemska pandemin som har förstört så många av våra planer och så mycket av den underhållning vi har sett fram emot. Så, men någonting positivt som kanske kommer ur det här är att virtuell motorsport verkligen uppnår en bredd som den tidigare inte riktigt har gjort.
Vad säger vi? Ska vi dra igång intervjun med Olle Rescue?
Jag tror nästan det, va? Well, anyway, let's get started. Hi, Oliver, and very welcome to IndiePodden, the only Swedish language podcast entirely devoted to IndyCar racing. And we are absolutely delighted to have you on.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. Thanks for the invite.
Thank you.
So you have not yet made your actual IndyCar debut, but you just finished this virtual IndyCar iRacing Challenge season. How do you feel about that? And, well, what happened on Saturday?
Yeah, I think I've gone the longest time calling myself an IndyCar driver without actually racing. So it's a difficult situation, but luckily, yes, like you said, we've had this iRacing IndyCar Challenge, fortunately, to kind of keep us busy and to keep us sharp. And it's actually a really, really great platform, very well known throughout the racing industry. And it seems like esports are getting bigger and bigger. So this event and events across the world with Formula One, be it supercars, are really boosting the esports scene, I guess you could say. But it wouldn't, for me, it was up and down. I've never been big into iRacing. I've never had my own simulator or my own iRacing account. So it was a learning process for me, like a lot of other drivers, in the IndyCar series. So, the first race in Watkins Glen went pretty well. We qualified, I think, fifth or sixth and finished fourth or fifth, I think it was. And then we had some struggles there in the midseason as you know, it's quite easy to make contact because you're not, you know, immersed in the actual car And there's some glitches here and there, which just comes with esports racing. But and then we finally, of course, I think most of you guys tuned into the last race in Indianapolis. It was really, really good for us. Unfortunately, we had to start a little mistake by myself in qualifying. We had to start 23rd. But you know how Indianapolis oval racing is. It's very easy to move forward. But also easy to get caught up in an accident. So, I think with a bit of luck and a perfect strategy by my team, Aaron McLaren SP, we were able to kind of shuffle our way forward. And then we were there at the end with probably the freshest or one of the freshest tires in the last five laps. So, I think that was our race to win there. Myself and Marcus, Marcus made a really good pass into turn three on the last lap, and him and my teammate Patricio made contact in turn four, which basically gifted me the win. And then Santino came in and made a very questionable move there and at the finish line.
Has he bought you some milk yet?
Oh no. No, he hasn't. I was just joking with him. Just poking some fun.
All right. So do you think that you will do more of iRacing esports in the future?
I'm sure we will. Our first race is still scheduled for the first weekend of June at Texas Motor Speedway. So it seems like that's still going to happen. The IndyCar iRacing Challenge has stopped. There won't be any more. As far as I know, there won't be any more IndyCar sanctioned iRacing events, but of course there are many different. I go on myself every couple of days still just to have some fun. I might do a big hosted race here and there, but nothing from IndyCar.
Sure. Okay. Well, let's move on to something a little bit different. I noticed on your Twitter that you played the Beatles Norwegian Wood. Very well.
Oh, yeah.
What's your music taste like then?
It fluctuates quite a bit. I'm very, very open-minded when it comes to music. I love all different kinds of music, except country. I don't really like country that much. U.S. country. All right. I have an electric guitar back home with an amplifier where I like to play some Offspring or some Metallica. I'm not really that good, but I can, I'm making progress. So my dad was in a garage band back when I was 6 or 7 years old. And that's kind of how he played bass guitar. And that's kind of how I was introduced to playing guitar. And I've just been picking it up every once in a while since then.
Maybe we'll hear you and Colton Hart are playing something together in the future, but
yeah. I've always thought of that. I think it'd be really cool. Will Power also plays the drums, and there's actually a lot of people in the sport who play an instrument. You just don't really, they just kind of keep it private. So I've always kept my music private, and just recently I've been starting to post some songs that I've been learning, and people seem to like it. So of course with this quarantine I have a little bit of extra time as well.
Just strikes me that Kenny Brick is quite a good guitar player, if I remember correctly. So I was just wondering, is there anything in sort of the being a musician or playing music and driving a race car really fast? Are there any similarities between the two?
Maybe, yeah. I'm
thinking stuff like precision stuff like that.
For sure. That's what I was getting to. And when I drive a race car, I tend to find myself under driving in some places because I want everything to be so precise, And I feel like that kind of ties into what I do on the guitar as well. Like if I record a song on my phone, and like one note wasn't quite right, I'll do it over and over again 100 times because I want to be perfect, And so I think that's really the only way it relates to racing, but I like to play because it just kind of turns my mind off, you know?
Okay.
It's,
that's interesting.
Guitar, there's nothing else that I can be thinking about at that moment, right? It's just all like the music and what you're hearing. So that's why.
That's interesting. I'm thinking that the level of precision you can achieve in the car must sort of also be depend on what type of car you're driving. Is that type of super high level of precision easier to achieve in your current IndyCar than in previous cars you've driven?
Well, I'd say it's harder at the moment because I haven't had enough experience and seat time in the car. The best drivers in IndyCar right now, for example, Will Power, I personally think he's the quickest driver in IndyCar at the moment to put down the one single lap. I think he's the guy to beat, and he's able to be so precise and so perfect while being on the complete edge at the same time, right? And I think that's kind of what I'm striving for. And to get there, I need to take a different approach to my driving style to kind of push over the limit in some areas so that I can bring it back and then turn it into my precise driving style.
Okay. But I was thinking, I mean, from a Swedish perspective, there has been a real great surge in interest in IndyCar racing, thanks to Felix Rosenqvist and Marcus Ericsson. But could you tell us a little bit about your Swedish background?
Yeah, so my mom is born and raised in southern Sweden around Ystad. She moved to the States and met my dad in South Beach when she was 22, I think, in Florida. She was a nanny with her best friend, in South Florida. And that's how she met my dad. And so she went back to Sweden, packed her bags. And then, you know, she's lived here since.
Okay.
But all of the, you know, the family that we're close with, my grandparents, my cousins, you know, at my, yeah, my aunt and uncle, they all live in Sweden, and we try to go there every year. We used to go every summer for midsummer.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's in the middle of the IndyCar season. So we try to go in the winter now for Christmas, and, my grandparents love that. So yeah, we still have, we have family in Reed, family in Ystad, and some family in Stockholm as well. So.
Yeah. That sounds great. This sounds like you really have a relationship to the country, to Sweden.
Yeah, I absolutely love Sweden. I really wish I could speak the language. That was my New Year's resolution this year, but it's not going too well.
Oh, that was my next question, how your Swedish is, but I'm not going to force you to demonstrate it.
Yeah.
So, you were supposed then to make your debut on home soil in Florida, St. Pete, but then it was quite suddenly canceled in the middle of Indy Lights practice, I believe. Could you tell us a little bit about that weekend? You got some good response in helping the team pick up the stuff and so on. How did you really absorb this cancellation of your IndyCar debut?
Yeah, it was quite an emotional weekend. I think not just for me, but for everybody in the paddock. You know, for the people that the caterers and you know, the merchants that drove all the way from California and Canada all to be at that race to, you know, sell their merchandise and to, you know, they had the food stands, and also for the mechanics. You know, they've been working so hard on every team. I'm sure that the 2 weeks prior to that event, everything is so rushed and condensed. You know, after the testing we had in Sebring and Coda, you know, there's so much work that was put into being there and setting up and getting ready to go. Everything was ready to go. The cars were sitting there. You know, I did my final seat fit. Every little bits and pieces was perfect. And, at first, you know, that was the week where the world kind of came to a halt, where people started to realize, and you know, in Formula One, the NBA, sports, all over the world became to realize, okay, we might have to stop what we're doing here. And at first we thought the weekend might be canceled right off the bat, and then they came out and announced that we were going to run without fans. And I think that I thought that that was what we're going to do for the weekend. Nobody really thought that it was going to be canceled. And then I don't know who made the decision, whether it was NBC or the health officials, but like you said, I think it was midday Friday. Maybe Indy Lights was on track, and they just the announcement came that they were going to cancel the weekend. So I'm not a very selfish person. I understand that that was the best call for you know what we've seen since then. You know, it's escalated quite a lot throughout the world, and it's still not over. Mm. So it was definitely the best decision. But I mean, for me, I've never experienced anything like that. I don't think anybody has in this day and age. And just to think, okay, I've been working towards IndyCar for the past 15 years, and every weekend, you know, you never experience anything like that. And then the day before I'm supposed to be on track for my first IndyCar race, it's just like the whole world just drops, right? Mm-hmm, so it's quite crazy. I'm sure many people have a similar feeling or similar story.
Mm. Must have been so frustrating for you on a personal level to, well, as you say, you've been working for this for so long and have it canceled with basically no time left before you reach your goal. That's tough.
I try to focus on things within my control, right? So it's the same for everyone, and I look at it as an opportunity now to get better every day and try to jump my competition in preparation for the next one. So I was surprised at how much attention I got for helping pack up the trailer. I was kind of raised to help the team and be a team player, and I guess, you know, not many people see that in IndyCar at the top level of motor racing. So, you know, I figured, of course, you know, on a normal race weekend, we come off the track from racing for 2 hours, and we go straight to debrief, and you don't really want to do anything, right? But just sit there and suck oxygen. I just saw it as a chance to help the guys and kind of give back a little bit, because I know what they were going through as well.
Sure. Mm. But let's then speak about this journey of 15 years, as you said. You're from Florida, which is a very motorsport friendly place. We have Sebring, we have Daytona, we have Homestead and St. Pete, and probably a lot of other racetracks, go-kart circuits that you've been on. How did you end up as being a race car driver? Do you have motorsports in the family? So how did you get to know that racing is what you wanted to make a living out of?
Yeah, racing doesn't run in the family for me, which is which isn't normal for most drivers. You know, normally your dad or someone in the family kind of brings you into it. And for me, it was just something that we stumbled upon. I think when I was 7 or 8 years old, back in Florida, our home track is Palm Beach International Raceway, back then known as Moroso Motorsports Park. And we had, maybe we saw a flyer or heard from a friend that we, should go out to the karting track and rent some go-karts for some fun. And, my dad and I went out there. Originally, the go-karts were broken. So they, so we turned around and went back home and said, okay, we'll come back another day. And, we decided to go back the next week, and they were fixed. And I had an absolute blast. And so funny, because I can remember that day so clearly, but, days after that, I can't remember so much at all. So, it was both my dad and I on the track having some fun, and he built his own motorcycles before he had my sister and I. My mom and my dad rode motorcycles in Miami. And, so he had his own toolbox from that and kind of understood how to work on a go-kart. So after that, we decided to buy our own kart and do some club racing. And, it was like a father-son hobby, right? We didn't, I didn't know anything about racing. I didn't know anything about IndyCar or what could happen after. It was just a hobby and some fun that I really enjoyed. Just being by myself in the car, just trying to better myself every day. And, I had a knack for speed, right? So yeah, it's, looking back at it, it's pretty crazy to see how far we've come. And since then, we've met some really great people in the sport, some people that have helped me financially and who have sponsored me to get me to the next level and to get me that preparation, and seat time that I need in the junior levels. And, I was sponsored by a karting team, Ocala Grand Prix out of Ocala, Florida, which is 3 hours north of us. And I raced, mm-hmm. I raced for that team for 5 years, from when I was, I think 10 to maybe 9 to 14, around that area, 10 to 15 years old. And that really just kickstarted my career and kind of turned me into the driver I am today. So yeah, that's the short version of the story.
But I mean, reading up on your career, it really sounds like you sort of succeeded thanks to your results, basically. Mm-hmm. That basically whatever you've driven during the last couple of years, you have been really, really successful, right? And step by step, you have been able to sort of climb all the way to IndyCar, thanks to your results, right?
Yeah, that's, because I don't come from that much funding, and, you know, there are several drivers in the sport now who have made it, just on raw talent, and you don't see it so much anymore. But luckily, we have series like the Road to Indy, and certain people in the sport who really try to help drivers that don't have the funding to make it. Obviously, racing is super expensive. Everybody knows that. So I didn't really have a choice but to win races and to win championships. And I don't have a plan B or this was my only shot, you know, or else we would have to quit and figure something else out. So when I found out about the Team USA scholarship and the Road to Indy, that's kind of where we set our sights, you know. And the kart racing world and the car racing world are quite separated, at least here in the States. You know, you don't get that much help and that much guidance to get into car racing or to get to where you want to go, whether it's sports car racing or IndyCar. And the Team USA scholarship, that program kind of helped me steer my career in the right direction. And so I won that scholarship, did a F1600 race in Silverstone and Brands Hatch at the end of 2016. And that also invited me to the USF 2000 scholarship shootout, which was in Laguna Seca. I think it was in December at the end of 2016. And that was a 3-day event. And the winner of that won $200,000 to race in USF 2000 in the following year, which was 2017. So yeah, I really just, that event and winning that scholarship, enabled me to kind of, it just gave me the opportunity to show what I could do in the series. And eventually with Cape Motorsports, we won that. And that kind of just propelled me through the Road to Indy. So it was really, really awesome opportunity and very, very thankful and feel a little bit lucky as well to have won that amount of money to race in the junior levels of American open wheel racing.
But I guess looking back over the last couple of years and what you have achieved, that must be very satisfying, I guess, to know that you have sort of reached all this far on raw talent and with the help of your results.
Yeah, it's kind of hard for me to think about sometimes because I never feel satisfied, really. You know, I've noticed that recently. Like, I've 4 years ago, I'm thinking to myself, okay, IndyCar, it's almost untouchable at the moment. Like, how amazing would it be to be racing an IndyCar full time for one of the best teams in the world, you know. And that's where I'm at now. But I don't feel like I did back then, you know. I don't feel satisfied. I feel like I'm looking towards the next challenge always, and I don't have time to kind of appreciate where I came from. And of course I need to. It's healthy to think about and to remember where I came from and to enjoy the moment. But I struggle sometimes to find that space.
But when do you think that you, for yourself, sort of realized that you're actually good enough to make this a profession?
I'd say in 2017 when I started winning USF 2000 races, and even then, you know, I'm not a very self-confident person, I don't think. And I always tend to think that the drivers I'm with are better than me, you know, which in a way, sure, can hurt, but in a way, like, it makes me want it even more, right? Like, I'm never really satisfied and never really happy with my performances. Like, there's always little things where we could have done better. But of course, when I started winning races in front of, you know, IndyCar fans and at the track on IndyCar weekends, you know, I realized that, okay, this, I'm capable and I have the talent to make this happen and to make this work. It's just a matter of centering that talent and making sure I get the most out of myself. Right. So that's where most of my thoughts went.
While on Road to Indy, I counted that you made 48 starts in 3 years in 3 different classes of cars, but you only ever had 2 did not finishes. How did you manage only retiring from 2 races in 48 starts in these usually quite chaotic junior formulas? If you see, if you watch Formula 3 races in Europe, there's always a pile up in turn 1 and so on and so on. How did you manage to become such a safe driver? Or are you that?
Yeah. that's probably one of my favorite stats, honestly. You know, apart, you know, far from the poles and the wins, and that's because not many people know about that, right? Everyone looks at the wins and the, you know, the stats that really matter. But that's one of my favorite accomplishments, I think, because that in the end, that's what that's one of the key points that got me to this point, that to this area in my career. You know, it's very important to keep the car in a safe position, and that's how I won championships as well, you know. And in 2018, I didn't have nearly the fastest car, and I struggled to finish on the podium every weekend in Pro Mazda. But I think I finished every single one of those races, which enabled me to finish third in the championship, which I shouldn't have done by any means. You know, I didn't have the equipment to do that. And so I didn't have the funding to pay for crash damage either, right? I didn't, I was raised to take care of my equipment and think twice about moves that I make on track.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. That kind of tied into those results.
You of course you progressed pretty quickly through the racing classes during the last couple of years, and I'm thinking about this final step you've taken from Indy Lights up to Indy Cars. How much of a learning curve is there making that move, and how much of an adjustment is required from you as a driver making that step?
I think the way the car drives isn't a massive step. Obviously, it does everything better. So it has more grip, more downforce, more power, more braking performance. But it's not a massive step in a different direction, right? It's on the same road. And I think the Road to Indy has done a good job in placing their car and their formulas in line with each other to kind of help the drivers ultimately get to IndyCar and not struggle so much. And I think you've seen from, since we came out with a new aero kit, I think in 2018, that's kind of helped Indy Lights drivers even more because the car doesn't have as much downforce as it has in the past. Mm. And you have to drive on edge, which is how the Indy Lights car is. And you've seen from Patricio Ward or Colton Herta. And, there's a couple other guys who have made it to IndyCar now. They're quick right away, right?
Mm.
It's the different aspects of IndyCar racing that you really have to do your homework on. And that's managing a race weekend. You know, there's much more going on. There's, there's strategy meetings and, there's way more than just being quick in an IndyCar. Being quick kind of comes secondary once you make it to this level. There's fuel saving and tire saving and being on the right strategy, taking care of your equipment, like we talked about before, doing the pit stops, which I've still never done, or I've never done a live pit stop in a race before.
Mm.
So, it's those different aspects of IndyCar racing that make it a bigger step than it is to meet the eye.
But is the IndyCar more enjoyable to drive than the Indy Lights car because it's more powerful and more downforce and better brakes and everything?
Yeah, for sure. I think as a racing driver, you're always striving for the next level, you know, because, you know, you spend a couple of weekends and a couple of tests in a car and it becomes slow again, almost, you know, everything slows down and you feel in control and you're always striving for that next step, right? So it's definitely an enjoyable car to drive, and you really have to manhandle it to get the time out of the car. You really have to, like I said, you have to drive over the tire and really work the steering wheel, especially through the high speed corners, I've noticed. So some drivers get a hold of that quite quickly, and some drivers need to adapt themselves to it. So.
Mm. Is that adaptation to the car maybe your biggest challenge in this coming rookie season of yours? Or are there other aspects of taking this step up to IndyCar which may be even bigger challenges?
Yeah, I think right now in a pure speed sense, I tend to take too much care of the tires. And so I might struggle a little bit more in a qualifying session than I would over a race stint. On paper, that's what it looks like right now, but obviously we haven't experienced the real thing. So that's sure. That's an area where I know, you know, I don't have to be told that's where I need to work. I already know that, from my experience, I need to work in that area, and pay attention to that area. Mm. But, as far as the other aspects, which I just spoke about, it's more of experience, and experience the race weekend that will help that, you know, with the pit stops and the fuel saving. And that's one area where I think iRacing has helped a little bit because we have our engineers and our strategists and the whole timing stand tuned in to every session of the iRacing IndyCar challenge.
Yeah.
And we use the same software and the same systems as we would in real life to make sure we're on the right strategy and to see, all the different, factors, you know.
That's pretty cool to be able to sort of, in the virtual sense, get accustomed to procedures and equipment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's just one less thing I'll have to worry about when I'm on track, because I've already heard these different calls on the radio and, I've already experienced it was actually even better to go through that in iRacing because it was an open mic. So we're using Discord and I can hear all the conversations that the strategists are having. So I can understand what kind of information they're looking for from me.
Mm.
And kind of understand where their minds are at. So when it comes time to real racing, I can give them even better feedback from where the tires are at and what kind of lap or traffic that I'm in right now. So you know, little things like that make a big difference in the end of the race.
That was one of the fun things with the iRacing challenge, that you could eavesdrop on the drivers' conversations while they were driving. never heard anything like that before, and I can understand Will Power's chat being disabled and so on. but that's in the past now, hopefully. The season is supposed to start on June 6th. Svenska Nationaldagen, Swedish National Day. Yay.
Yeah.
But what will the coming month look like for you and the team?
So right now the team is in the process of going back to work. It looks like they're going to take shifts. So maybe not the whole team will be back in there. So we probably have, let's say, maybe 450 people in the shop, I think, working there. So maybe they'll be half that every other day. Just to minimize the amount of bodies or people working together so closely. So, that's pretty exciting to get the mechanics and crew back in the shop. And I'm in Indianapolis now to, work with my trainer and to, you know, just to get back on my regimen. Obviously I have the simulator here as well, which helps keep me sharp in some ways. I got a nice steering engine, so I can turn up the weight of it and, the steering weight and the force feedback, which kind of simulates what it's like in the car. So, I also just got a road bike too, which has always been a goal of mine to have. I love biking. So hopefully the weather will warm up here soon and, I can get back outside some more and, yeah, that's pretty much it. I play some guitar.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Oliver.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot for having me. Anytime, guys. Hopefully I'll see you at some races this year.
I just read that it's your teammate, Pat O'Ward's birthday today.
Oh, is it? Good call. So, thanks for the reminder.
You're not being invited to a big party since the Cinco de Mayo also, so...
Oh no, he's in Texas. He's slacking.
Okay, you get on well, you and Pato?
Yeah, we're good friends.
Mm. Yeah. And you may get to become teammates with Fernando Alonso also. Maybe later this summer.
That's what it looks like. Yeah, in August when we go racing at the Speedway.
Zach Brown also mentioned Jimmy Johnson and Jenson Button. So the third car in your team may become kind of an all-star car.
Yeah.
So no pressure there. Do you look forward to have any of these old veterans but in other disciplines joining you?
Yeah, definitely. They bring so much experience to the team and to Pato and myself. And I'm just looking forward to see how they work, you know, how they manage the weekend and what kind of, you know, their lingo when they're giving feedback and just their style of driving and looking over data. You know, they've driven Formula One. They've seen it all. And to have Jimmy Johnson as well. Obviously it's not for certain, but, I know he was planning on testing on a road course right after St. Pete when all this happened. And, maybe we'll see him drive a road course one day. So, all drivers I respect a lot and, it'd be really good for the team as well to have those names involved in our team.
And of course, we're all expecting you to do well in IndyCar, Oliver. But I'm also expecting Zach Brown to give you a shot in a Formula One car if your debut season in IndyCar goes well. So, yeah.
Yeah, no pressure.
No pressure there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Nice. Cool. Thank you for the listeners as well. Thanks for having me. Enjoy the spring in Sweden.
Yeah, thank you very much, and enjoy your debut race. We're really looking forward to it, and I hope to hear from you later on.
Thank you. Tack så mycket. Stay in touch.
Tack så mycket själv.
Yeah.
Hej då.
Hej då.
Did I want to know where my easy rider gone? Did I want to know where my easy rider gone? She's an easy rider, but she do ride hard so long.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.